Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Al Mean.
We welcome you back to Walking Between the Worlds. Thank you so much for joining us in exploring the relationship of ourselves vis-a-vis those in our environment. And every other week, we also examine the relationship of ourselves with ourselves and the divine. This week, we are discussing conflict resolution and the art of listening. Learn how to identify what should be tolerated and what should not be tolerated. How to express yourself in a confrontation and how to deal with a rageful partner. Explore anger management techniques and the four stages of conflict resolution. In the issue of conflict, the first thing to realize is not to take anything at face value. The second thing to realize is that we have co-created this situation with the parties involved. And that is a very important realization because then it starts to thin in areas of where there is guilt and innocence. We look at karma. Karma, also in the past, has played a very great role in why certain things were done, quote, to us. And sometimes those people had agreed to do those things that we might get perception. It is now time for us to take a look at the words of the beautiful poem on guilt and innocence out of the book The Prophet by the Lebanese poet Khalil Gibran. And I read from a portion in. The murdered is not unaccountable for his own murder, and the robber is not blameless in being robbed. The righteous is not innocent of the deeds of the wicked, and the white-handed is not clean in the doings of the felon. In other words, he is saying that everything is interconnected, and it is that we are co-creators for the events of our life. Yea, the guilty is oftentimes the victim of the injured. And still more often, the condemned is the burden-bearer for the guiltless and unblamed. In other words, we have oftentimes played these roles very deliberately to be mirrors to others. You cannot separate the just from the unjust and the good from the wicked. For they stand together before the face of the sun, even as the black thread and the white are woven together. And when the black thread breaks, the weaver shall look into the whole cloth, and he shall examine the loom also. In other words, to judge someone's guilt, we have to look at a much bigger picture, often one larger than we can see. If any of you would bring judgment to the unfaithful wife, let him also weigh the heart of her husband in scales, and measure his soul with measurements. And let him who would lash the offender look into the spirit of the offended. And if any of you would punish in the name of righteousness, and lay the axe unto the evil tree, let him see to its roots. And verily, he will find the roots of the good and the bad, the fruitful and the fruitless, all entwined together in the silent heart of the earth. And you, judges who would be just, what judgment pronounce you upon him who, though honest in the flesh, yet is a thief in spirit? In other words, even in the slightest disagreement with someone we love, we cannot take things at face value. What penalty lay ye upon him who slays in the flesh, yet is himself slain in the spirit? And how prosecute you him who in action is a deceiver and an oppressor, yet who is also is aggrieved and outraged? And how shall you punish those whose remorse is already greater than their misdeeds? In other words, a sincere apology might mean that that person has already been punished. Is not remorse the justice which is administered by that very law which you would fain serve? Yet you cannot lay remorse upon the innocent, nor lift it from the heart of the guilty. Unbidden shall it call in the night, that men may wake and gaze upon themselves. And you who would understand justice, how shall you unless you look upon all deeds in the fullness of light? Once again, in the big picture, behind the appearances, oftentimes from a vantage point we are not yet able to receive. Only then shall you know that the erect and the fallen are but one man standing in twilight between the night of his pygmy self and the day of his God self, and that the cornerstone of the temple is not higher than the lowest stone in its foundation. One of the cornerstones of humility, and humility is the only way to successful relationship, beloved ones, is that we acknowledge that we cannot possibly know from the vantage point that we have. The other half of humility is that we realize that in the beautiful weaving, the tapestry he speaks of the oneness of all life, that no life is more important than another, that he who mirrors that which the infinite is not is as important as the one who lives that which the infinite is. I have asked to join me today the wonderful researcher who happens to be my office manager, Hilda, and she has been very instrumental in helping produce much of the books and the media that we have worked with over the years to get the teachings out to the masses. And I've asked her to join us in looking at the preliminary steps that we need to take in order to even determine whether a conflict exists. Welcome, Hilda, and thank you for helping us.
It's good to be here, Almeen.
So tell us a little bit about how we determine whether it's even a battle worth fighting, whether there is a conflict.
Well, if one is walking a path of impeccability, it is imperative to suspend judgment when some seeming offense or disagreement occurs until we have obtained clarity. For example, some acquaintance hurts our feelings, but we do realize words can mislead. We therefore ask, what did you mean when you said? Or, why do you say such and such? This is not asked in judgment, for no conclusion has been reached, but rather with an attitude of neutrality. When we have ascertained the true meaning of what was said through feeling the intent behind the words and getting as much clarity as possible, we can proceed. Does it still bring our hackles up or create a knee-jerk reaction? If it does, we need to ask whether it's important enough to resolve with the other person, or is it merely one of our buttons that were pushed in order for us to examine some event in our own life that is waiting to yield its insights and power?
Oh, I love this, which you have just said, because we have said we are co-creators of the event. In other words, if there is some blind spot, some occlusion in our vision, we're going to deliberately pull these people into our life, which is why the philosopher Khalil Gibran says, is it the other person that is the victim? Because if we had those insights, we may not need to pull them in to give us these buttons to push, as she calls it. Please continue.
If it is important, however, it needs to be addressed. Some guidelines on how to decide what is important enough to merit confrontation are when there is hurtful intent or destructiveness, when it is injurious to the inner child, disrespectful to the sacred world of the inner sage, or belittling to the inner nurturer, when it violates our privacy or our sacred space, when it violates our mutual agreement or trust or is dishonest in any way, when it belittles us or suppresses expressing our individuality or causes us to have to be less than we are, when it attempts to manipulate, control, or dominate us, when it criticizes or accuses us. If it fits into one of the above or a similar scenario, then the following approach should be used. First of all, some basics should be agreed upon and perhaps even written. Within our relationships, all feelings are valid. That means we do not criticize someone for feeling a certain way. All emotions should find a safe place for expression. Phrases such as, you always, You never. And why do you, when the question is not a question but a disguised accusation, should be prohibited? Neither words nor emotions should be used to attack or manipulate. When someone is in the grip of uncontrollable rage, there should be pre-existing coping mechanisms established. They are to wash their hands and face and engage in strenuous activity, such as riding your exercise bike, jogging, that sort of thing, to organize their thoughts before expressing them. Writing letters that are not dispatched is also a productive way of communicating where there are rage issues.
Now, feelings really must be expressed and a solution proposed by the confronting person. This may have to be done a few times before achieving results. When you do this, I feel this. Is it possible that in future we can try such and such? And if somebody came at one that way, what would be the appropriate way for the other person to respond?
Well, feelings must be expressed and a solution proposed by the confronting person. This may have to be done a few times, but the appropriate way for the other person to respond is to first make sure they understand. Are you saying, if they acknowledge that a change in behavior is appropriate, it's advisable to create a backup plan, since deep-seated habits are hard to break? Can we have a secret hand gesture or phrase to remind you when old habits creep in? Or could I pull you aside to remind you? If instead the other person starts venting, sit absolutely still and let it run its course until it is spent. Then repeat what you said, always bringing the conversation back to the relevant point. If this does not work, write it out and request a written response within a few days. If this fails to resolve the issue, the four steps of conflict resolution.
And we better wait a little bit before we get to those. I had a little cue that it's time for a commercial break. When we get back, listeners, we will look at the steps that we take in conflict resolution. And I'm going to ask Hilda to come back and help us with those. Thank you very, very much for being part of our Light family, and we will see you soon after this commercial break.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almeen. To learn more about Almeen and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back to Walking Between the Worlds. And we are discussing today conflict resolution and the art of listening. There are four very important steps in conflict resolution, which we will deal with next. But what we wanted to just take a brief look at is if we have moved through these four steps, which we are going to discuss next, of conflict resolution, and if everything we've tried, all these techniques we have been discussing in our first segment of the show, do not seem to work, what remains? There's only a few choices left to us, and what are they? Hilda, could you address that, please?
Yes. Probably the Probably the first thing is to evaluate whether what you have in common contributes sufficiently to your life for you to continue to put up with the differences. If the differences are more significant, either sever the relationship or be prepared for ongoing discomfort.
So in other words, it might be a very good idea to make a chart with the pros and the cons. And if those cons outweigh those pros, that's something you need to know about. And so that's the sort of evaluation that you're referring to. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. Then there is a way to flow around the obstacles because the relationship has been determined to be worth saving. Be creative. Does your spouse embarrass you in public? Create a private world for your interaction and make as many public appearances as possible alone. It's never a good idea to force round pegs into square holes.
Boy, that is a wonderful statement, because so much of relationship goes awry due to one of the parties controlling the other. And freedom is the nature of every living being. And at some point, rebellion will come, whether subversively or openly.
Well, the third technique may be the most difficult, and that is to change your attitude. Even if you do the damage control suggested in the flow suggestion, there are still going to be odd times when offensive behavior will happen. Lift yourself above the situation like the eagle that flies above the world. Envision yourself sitting in an insulating bubble of pinkish-purple light, holding your inner child and talking to it during the occurrence.
And by the way, folks, just if I may butt in here for a moment, that pinkish-purple light is the color of pure love, and we have had enormous success with it. Very, very troubled children that get put into a quiet room. If the windows are the pinkish-purple, there seems to be a dramatic improvement. We've had people with schizophrenic tendencies have good success by wearing that in the form of glasses during their awake time. So that is why she is suggesting that you envision yourself in this insulating bubble of pinkish-purple light. It restores your peace when you are in a very unpeaceful situation. Please continue, Hilda.
It's never to the benefit of indwelling life to accept the unacceptable. It is also eroding to have many little occurrences happen day in and day out.
Yeah, like water on a stone.
Absolutely. How diligently is the person working on improving him or herself? All these factors must be taken into consideration in coming to a final conclusion. Another helpful tool is to picture enduring this behavior for the next 10 years and weigh it against the positive aspects of the relationship.
And, you know, one thing that I can ask you, we're going to do a little bit of self-work later in the program. We do this every other week, and we ask you to have a pen and a piece of paper handy. We're going to actually ask you where there are dubious areas in your life, areas that you wonder if this is an area you should change. To do what she has just suggested is a very helpful thing. What we ask you to do is to just take the next 10 years. How would it feel to stay in the position I am in currently with that particular person, in this relationship, in the way my child is treating me, etc.? How can I stay in that for the next 5 years? Can I do it? If it is just, you know, something that you can easily handle or something you can handle because the benefits are so big, no problem. Otherwise, there is conflict resolution needed. And the other thing is we also sometimes create a meditation where you see two doors before you. And then you go through the one choice and look at the future in a meditative state non-cognitively. And then you look through the other choice, through the door. And what is the feeling, the non-cognitive information you get from both choices? Now, before we go into the four very major steps of conflict resolution, I want to tell you where they come from. 2 weeks ago, we studied, well, actually, it might be more than 2 weeks ago, but we studied in one of these discussions that we've had on this radio station, the stages of sexuality, how the stages of sexuality, in fact, go through different layers, and that these layers represent The four bands of compassion, the four huge frequency bands that create the four directions of the cosmos. They are the steps in which everything develops. They develop sexually, social stages in communities develop this way. Conflict resolution, to be effective, must pattern itself after the resolution of life in the cosmos. So when we come back, we want you now to take a moment and just look at the choices in your life. And when we come back, we will look at the four steps.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We are now ready, after having looked at our own areas in our life during the music that was playing. And by the way, folks, the music is available from almaineandpaul.com. Almaine and Paul, all one word, .com. And you can get some little snippets off of there that you can listen to further. But now it is time, since you've identified areas in your life that where conflict resolution may be needed, that we take a look at the four stages of it that patterns itself after the cosmic blueprint of the resolution and growth of all life. Hilda, what is the first stage?
Well, the first step is to find your common ground. Unless this is first identified, we cannot properly determine which parts to resolve in the following stages. Failure to determine what we have in common with the opposition robs us of the priceless gift of becoming more knowledgeable by learning new aspects and viewpoints of that which we are, the common ground. Too often, opponents prematurely focus on the differences during this first stage, instead of simply assimilating the commonalities so that these initial gifts of insight can be received.
So what she is saying is that we look at first for sameness. Pretty different from what the rest of the world does, because the very thing that they tackle immediately is the differences. And then we fail to learn from others. And we fail to see that, listen, we are not as far apart as we seemed. In the second stage, as she points out, we're going to see exactly what is necessary to be left in terms of conflict resolution. So, Hilda, what is in stage two?
In stage two, a closer scrutiny of what is the same and what is different must take place. Those unknown pieces must be examined in depth rather than taken at face value to extract common elements. It is necessary to examine these details in the context of the larger picture. Although we may have superficial differences, are we exploring a similar pattern? Are the core issues the same, even though our method of dealing with them might be different? In this way, the true differences to resolve are isolated from the similarities.
Remember this one, folks. The true differences need to be isolated from the similarities. Sorry, please continue.
The last step is to creatively externalize them. Design a case scenario. Objectively examine the issues as though they're happening to someone else. Reverse roles. And honestly examine what it would be like to be in the other person's shoes.
So, in step three, or the third stage, in conflict resolution, and I'm going to ask you to give a little scenario about what I'm going to say, Hilda, so if you can listen well. In conflict resolution, this stage requires that we abandon our preoccupation with our viewpoint and genuinely try to understand the opposing position. Otherwise, how can we see where we're really different? That true listening has to take place. The need now arises to create a situation to test the validity of the opposing viewpoint. It might be that we just never have considered it, or that social conditioning has made our view too narrow. To see and understand it better by observing it in action. Where the stakes are high, the testing of the unknown can be done in multiple smaller controlled settings. Always do this testing where, you know, if it did go awry, you can afford to take your blows. So it needs to have damage control, in other words. Can you give us an example of where this would apply, Hilda?
One that I think is common to most listeners. Your teenager wants to date.
Aha, yes.
You feel she's too young. She feels you're ruining her life because all her friends date. After completing the previous steps, one or two controlled situations could be tested, where she's dropped off and picked up by you and has to call you if she changes locations. This option is opposed to one requiring an absolute yes or no with one party, or the other feeling unheard. An informed conclusion can then be drawn as to what can be supported.
Okay, so in other words, the worst that can happen is that she's not there when you pick her up, or she forgot to call you when she went over to another friend's house and she's got a cell phone. It's a damage-controlled situation to test the waters, to see how well she is going to keep to her end of the bargain. Now, in stage four, we've now identified what is same, you know, and what is different. In other words, where are we in a meeting of the minds, and where is there true conflict? What would stage four be?
Well, this is where we agree to disagree. The level of interaction is determined by what can be assimilated without being destructive to inner life or without being light and growth repressive. The key element of the success of this stage is to keep supporting the areas of common ground and the growth of all. Examples of the differences, degrees of interaction that could be allowed might be, the in-laws don't like you, but they love your wife. Because they show her dislike when around you, you needn't be in their presence often, but nevertheless support your spouse being with them as she chooses.
Ah, so don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Don't attack the spouse because his parents don't like you.
Mm-hmm. If their intent is destructive, such as to break up the marriage, this needs to be clearly identified, and the interaction must then be very minimal or terminated, depending on the accompanying level of risk.
And so, my brothers and sisters, just really quickly to look at what she just said. You see, there's really only one decision in the entire cosmos. What is enhancing of indwelling life, and what is not? We're not dealing with appearances. That which is the true essence of life, what enhances it and what doesn't? We spoke before about self-reliance in relationship. I believe that was 2 weeks ago. And we looked then at how these specific stages function. And what we saw is, look, the ultimate goal of life is to get to the place where there is unity within diversity. Your spouse will feel so supported that you don't totally object to the parents coming to the house. You just take a little vacation when they do. Because he feels or she feels supported. They don't feel rejected or placed in the middle where they have to choose between people that they love. This is enhancing of unity within diversity, the goal of all relationship. And please continue, like another example.
Well, if the differences are only superficial, but the common goals and philosophies are strong, you can probably live closely together or work together while honoring and supporting diversity within unity. As we move through the stages, you see the following ways of relating to each other. Uniformity. This is the stage of dependence on sameness to understand ourselves more fully. Exploring sameness versus difference, codependence is experienced. As we find sameness in the differences, we understand ourselves by observing that which we are not.
In other words, she's now actually mentioned two of these stages. She has said uniformity, that where you're looking for sameness, is a stage of dependence. Then you find a stage of codependence, where you're still looking for sameness, but you're starting to explore differences within the sameness. And that is diversity within uniformity. So those are the first two steps, and you find the same characteristics actually in two of the directions, which are representative, as I said, of these huge bands of frequency that uphold the cosmos. What would the third step, the third stage, represent in a nutshell?
Well, as we explore those differences, we seek our independence by focusing on that which we are not, as it is mirrored by the other party. We determine whether the relationship is worth proceeding with.
So in the first stage, we have dependence. In the second stage, we have codependence, where you don't step too far out of the box. And then the third stage in this development of conflict resolution is independence, where you're exploring the differences. What would the fourth stage summarized be?
Well, the fourth stage is unity within diversity, the stage of interdependence where we cooperate for the good of common goals, supporting the diversity that each party contributes. The final stage is the goal of all life, since it provides the greatest opportunity for growth, whereas uniformity slows growth through stagnation. The more differences there are, the more uncomfortable the relationship will be. The greater the commitment to the greater goal, the more stable.
In other words, what my sister here is saying is that, my brothers and sisters, light workers have traditionally put up with that which is unacceptable, with that which really does not produce growth, but discomfort. And where that is the case is when it is too large of a gap, when the differences are too big. That is the time they have to go their way and you have to go your way, because you have a right to follow a path that makes your heart sing. Let us take a short break for commercials, and when we come back, we'll take a look at what actually the task of a peacemaker is in this issue of conflict resolution and the art of listening. Thank you for joining us. Come back after the commercial break.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We are now back with Walking Between the Worlds. and we are looking very, very carefully at what it takes to have conflict resolution that is productive. We are now going to look at this issue of being a peacemaker. Light promoters frequently make a very large mistake of seeing physical concerns through rose-colored glasses, you know, of a spiritual vantage point, of course, but then they treat them as though they are in fact spiritual rather than physical, you see. Some examples would be, let's say Bill loves his brother Sam, but his childhood experiences have made him inclined to find security in wealth. Through conniving manipulation, Bill cheats Sam out of his share of their inheritance. Because Sam can see how Bill has suffered and how much money means to him, because he always knows that deep down Bill loves him, he lets him get away with it. Now, let's look at really what happened there. Sam believes himself to be acting magnanimously, but in fact he's really injuring Bill. Bill can now keep his blindness in calling theft cleverness, and has been allowed to create karma that will cause similar situations to himself. It's like we said in the very beginning of the show when we read the beautiful work of Khalil Gibran, that the robber is not guiltless when he himself is robbed. If he doesn't see clearly when he reaps his karma, it will have to happen again and again. And Sam has forgone the opportunity to lovingly and firmly let Bill know that his conduct is unfair and unacceptable. Mary's eldest daughter, as a second scenario, seems to be floundering in every area of her life, and Mary feels guilt because she believes she is in part responsible. Oh my goodness, how often do we have this with parents and children? If only I'd known at the time what I know now, I would have had my child raised a little bit differently. But, you know, so she was a parent when she was floundering herself. She keeps saving her daughter and finds that she has to do without in order to manage her budget as a result. Now, let's examine this. Is this really being a peacemaker? Seeing the reason for someone's shortcomings doesn't excuse them. We may have compassionate understanding for the cause of their behavior, but to indulge the behavior itself keeps them locked into that position. See, lightworkers frequently look behind the appearances, which they should. You cannot take things at face value. But we then have to treat them from the level that they're occurring. So compensating for the lack in someone else's perception robs them of the opportunity to grow in perception. When we keep someone from growing just to ease our guilt, we are in fact acting selfishly. If we serve the growth of all concerned, we will not view our role as peacemaker as one of covering someone else's folly. To promote peace means to enhance growth as effortlessly as possible, and sometimes it means to expose someone's flawed viewpoint. It would also mean helping someone ask the type of questions that can set them free from the treadmill of the lack of perception. Another example would be, there are three friends, Jane and Sue and Beth. Sue and Beth get into a disagreement and are trying to solve it through letters to each other. Sue sends all letters first to Jane to check over, asking whether it's sounding too adversarial and posing various other questions that skirt the main issue, namely that she is breaching a verbal agreement upon which Beth has relied and acted upon for many months. Jane loves both her friends and wants to make peace. She therefore focuses on helping Sue write as nicely as possible, attempting to answer the irrelevant questions that divert the focus from what is really going on. Hilda brought this point up earlier. How important it is to always, even if they vent, you keep coming back to the only question that the whole argument is about. What is the relevancy of the argument? When the right question isn't asked, everybody can spin out in you said, he said, different directions. Even though she scrupulously tries to avoid giving advice, not pointing out that the questions don't really lead to the discovery of the core disagreement or problem, but it actually prolongs it. As Sue asks more and more friends to advise her and all give a neutral response or a response positive to her position, not knowing both viewpoints, she in fact becomes further and further deviated from asking the core question. Did I have a verbal agreement with my friend dependent on, and am I going back on my word? The mirrors around her have given no hint of any flaws in her reasoning, and she's therefore becoming more convinced by the moment that her actions are justified. If, on the other hand, for instance, Jane realizes that by playing this avoidance game with Sue, she's not being a friend to either Sue or Beth, she may ask instead, where is the area of blindness in this matter? She may then, after gathering facts from both sides, find the core of the disagreement. When this is pointed out with love to one friend or another, the disagreement at least has a chance to be healed, sooner rather than later. But you see, sometimes these peacemakers, in an attempt to avoid taking sides or in a misguided effort to focus on the positive, which helps only if one is also prepared to point out the flaws in perception, peacemakers tend to complicate things. Every challenge has a core mystery or a blind spot. No matter how much clearing of emotions has to be done, it must be accomplished for all involved to grow. As peacemakers, our task is to reveal the root of the conflict, to serve only indwelling life rather than the mirrors of illusion. Mirrors entrap. The truth, on the other hand, sets us free. Now, beloved ones, we also need to look at what it takes to cultivate the art of true listening. We have, in most instances, in those that are in ego identification, a deafening dialogue in our minds. Someone is speaking to us. The dialogue is already saying what we're going to be answering them or relating to their experiences. Always having to relate to outside experience is part of ego identification. But regardless, true listening cannot take place in the presence of an internal dialogue in the head. You know, we've had much discussion about love during these past weeks in relationship, either self-love or otherwise. Love also, to its fullest capacity, cannot happen in the presence of this dialogue. How does the dialogue become silence? By tracing our knee-jerk reactions and seeing where there are areas we need to take a look at our own lives. When we get the lessons, the dialogue lessens. Beloved ones, next week we will discuss the mystical keys to manifesting in our life. The mystical keys to manifestation. Thank you so very much for joining us. And we hope to see you again next week. Thank you for being with us on Walking Between the Worlds.
We hope you have enjoyed today's show, Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean.